Well, this story could well be the most well-known story in the whole Bible. There are lots and lots of stories, there are lots and lots of people who have never, ever set foot inside a church, and yet they know this story. There are many people who have never opened the Bible, and yet they've heard of this amazing story of this giant defeated by a shepherd boy. And it's a great story, isn't it? It's a really great story. Here we have a giant, incredible size, kitted out with the best military equipment of the day. Loud, terrifying voice. And here is a young man, possibly a child, zero experience in military warfare. And he throws a stone at this giant and kills him. Amazing victory in an impossible situation. And we all love this story, don't we? This story of David and Goliath. But what is this story all about? Is this story just about a big giant getting defeated by a shepherd boy? Is this story just about doing big things when God is with us? Is it just about defeating the Goliaths of my life? Well, I'm convinced that at the heart of this story is none of these things. But at the heart of this story is a young man with a passion for God's name. And all the people around him were trampling on God's glorious name. And this young boy, he couldn't sit by and watch. He had to do something about it. And this boy, he had made a wonderful discovery about the living God. He discovered that God isn't just a distant God, but God is a personally knowable God. And so this boy gets to know God personally. And as he begins to understand something of God's ways, as he begins to grasp something of God's beauty and gloriousness and goodness, he falls in love with this God. And out of this love grows a passion to put this glorious name on display. And this boy, he cared about what people said about his God. He cared about how people viewed his God. And as he sees God's name trampled on by this giant Goliath, he must do something about it. Well, can I ask you, do you know God personally this evening? Do you know God in the way that David knew God? You know, God is a God who wants to be known, and he has revealed himself in such a way that we can know him in an intimate and personal way. And David was a boy who knew God personally, and he was a boy that was passionate about the name of God. And we find his whole life characterized by a concern for God's name amongst the people he lived. Well, what about you? Are we a people concerned, passionate about the name of God? The name of our God in Shepshed, in our families, the name of God amongst our friends, and also overseas in places like Ukraine and Senegal. Well, I want to have a look at this evening at this passion that David had for God's name. And first of all, I want us to note that this passion was an incredibly strong passion. So number one, an incredibly strong passion. An incredibly strong passion. David's desire for the name of the Lord was an incredibly strong desire. And we see this in a multitude of ways in the passage that we read. We see the strength of his passion in his response to the giant that he's trampling on the name of his God. You know, David wasn't looking for a giant to fight. His three oldest brothers are in the national army. And his concerned father frequently sends David out to check up on his brothers. And he's on such an errand when all of a sudden he hears a terrible booming voice resounding through the air. And even though he's probably sat at quite a distance from the giant, he hears these terrible words that the giant utters. I defy the armies of God. Choose a man from amongst you and let him fight me. Well, how does David respond to such a statement? How does he respond? Well, we find him absolutely filled with anger. You know, it's like there's a fire burning inside his heart. And he cries out these words, "How dare this man defy the army of the living God? Who is this man that he should defy the living God?" Do you see the strength of David's passion for God in those words? He says a bit later that the king had better have a good reward for the man who fights Goliath, because he's defying the living God. I wonder this evening, what makes you burn inside you? Perhaps you're driving a car on a country road. The national speed limit applies. And sitting right in front of you, there's a driver, and he's driving along at 20 miles an hour. And there you are, sat behind him. You're frustrated, you're angry. Or perhaps you're that careful driver at the front, driving at 20 miles an hour, and you're getting angry because there's a lunatic behind you. He wants to hurtle round the bend at 60 miles an hour. And you know, we easily get angry, don't we? And yet, when God's name is dishonoured, we don't get angry. When somebody uses God's name like a swear word, oh my God, where's that feeling of sadness within us? Where's that anger? When there is sin in our lives, things we should not be doing, things against our conscience inside us is telling us that we are wrong. We feel guilty, and God's word is telling us that it is wrong, and it's bringing dishonour on God's name. Where is our anger? And the reality is we're not angry, and we just excuse our sin. I'll never forget growing up with my parents, a couple who love the Lord, and we had a television in the house. And I remember watching that TV, and there was some media blasting out and trampling over God. And I remember my dad taking the remote control and turning off the TV. And later on, actually, he got rid of the television altogether. Oh, that we would have a passion like David, a strong passion for the name of God. Well, we see the strength of David's passion in the anger when he hears the voice of Goliath trampling on the living God. But not only that, we see the strength of David's passion in the fact that he must do something. He must act. He couldn't just let this giant dishonour the name of God. You know, the giant was wanting to bring shame on a nation which represented the King of Kings. He wanted to turn God's people into slaves, just like the devil wants to turn people into slaves today. Today the devil wants to turn people into slaves of alcohol, slaves of the love of money, slaves of pornography. A recent survey revealed that over half of British young men are watching pornography on a regular basis. And the devil today is succeeding in turning young men into slaves of pornography. And that is going to have an adverse effect on our society and the way women are treated in generations to come. And in Africa, where we work, there are people who are slaves of fear of the evil spirits. People who tonight will not be able to sleep because of a terror inside of them, of the evil spirits around them. Well, David, he couldn't just sit there. He had to do something. And so there he is in front of the king. And he says to the king, "Don't let anyone be discouraged by this giant. I'll go. I'll fight him. This man has defied the armies of the living God. Therefore, I will destroy him, just like I destroyed a bear and a lion when looking after my father's sheep." Amazing, isn't it? You know, a small young man wouldn't take fighting a Goliath on lightly. Yet David does, because his passion for God's name drives him to act. And there's something that's very, very sad in this story. And it's that David was the only man who was willing to act. Everybody around him was paralyzed into inaction. King Saul should have been the man to fight Goliath, but he was terrified and would not fight. David's brothers should have fought Goliath, but there they sat, frightened, unwilling to fight. Not one single person in the whole of a nation was willing to fight, and only David was prepared to fight for the honour of God's name. Do you care for the name of your God? You know, you don't have to look for Goliath to fight. If you go about God's work this week, you'll find people all around you trampling over the honour of God's name. The Bible isn't true. God doesn't exist. I don't care about God. Christianity is out of date. Will we be paralysed into inaction? Or will we be like David? I have to act for the sake of my God's name amongst the people whom I live. I have to go to the prayer meeting this Thursday evening. I have to pray. I have to take a stand in my community. I have to for the sake of the glory of my God. Well, we see the strength of David's passion in the anger against the words of Goliath. We see his passion in the fact that he cannot just sit there doing nothing. He must act. And we also see his passion in the way that he keeps going despite opposition and discouragement. Pretty much every character in the story dismisses David and discourages him from fighting Goliath. His three older brothers discourage him. When he talks to them about his concern for the honour of God's name, they mock him, they jeer at him, they tell him to go home. And you know, that must have been so painful for David. That must have been so hard to listen to his own brothers speaking to him in such a way. And perhaps that's happening to you. You want to act for the honour of God's name, but your family are discouraging you. Maybe it's even a Christian brother or sister. Here is King Saul. King Saul discourages David. When David talks to him about his willingness to fight the giant, how does the king react? He says, "You can't fight. You're just a boy. You have zero military experience. Go and get some life experience." And perhaps that's your experience too. People telling you you're inadequate. Or perhaps you're telling yourself, "I can't do it." But you know, the wonderful thing is David doesn't let those discouraging him stop him. He was going to act for the glory of God's name. And he acts. And God mightily uses him to do something awesome. And if you're going to be passionate about God's name, you can guarantee that somebody will try and discourage you. And the Bible itself states that don't be surprised if the world hates you. Jesus said, "Remember that the world hated me first." And if we're passionate about God, putting God's name on display, we're going to get discouragement. But just look at David. He doesn't let discouragement stop him. He goes and he makes a stand against Goliath. Humanly speaking, David was going to get defeated. But God lay hold of David and did an amazing, mighty work through him. Somebody once said, "All God's giants were weak men who did great things for God because they reckoned on God being with them." Well, David had an incredibly strong passion for the name of God. And we've seen that passion, the strength of his passion in three different parts of the story. But there's something else I want to notice about this passion. So number one, we've looked at an incredibly strong passion. Number two, let's look at an incredibly God-centered passion. Number two, an incredibly God-centered passion. Not only did David have an incredibly strong passion for the name of God, but he was incredibly selfless and God-centered in that passion. He was wholeheartedly passionate for God. You know, often when we have a passion, there has to be something in it for us. When I was at primary school, I used to support a football team called Wolverhampton Wanderers. And you know, the only reason why I supported this team was because the friends in my class supported with this team. And there was something in it for me, something to talk about with my friends. And you know, the truth of the matter was that if my friends hadn't supported this team, then I would never have bothered. And you know, perhaps, you know, we can be passionate about our job because we want to progress in our career and there's something in it for me. Or perhaps, you know, we can have a passion and that passion is a selfless passion, but how often self creeps into that passion. I can tell you that I have a passion for my wife. I love her and I think she's an amazing person. And I know all of you here this evening would agree with me. And I love her and I think she's a wonderful person. And I remember being sat here at the recent funeral service of our dear brother Stan. And as I was sat there, in sadness with everyone else, I remember found myself praying to the Lord. I said, Lord, please can my wife pass away before me so that she doesn't have to go through the grief and sadness of seeing me die. And I prayed that prayer because I'm passionate about my wife and I love her and I don't like seeing her sad. And but you know, so often self creeps into that passion. And a few weeks ago somebody gave us a box of chocolates, and a couple of weeks ago I found myself sneaking off into the cupboard to eat one. And you know, I could have offered my wife a chocolate out of the box, couldn't I? That would have been loving. And so often self creeps into our marriages. And so we find selfless passions often have a self component. But one of the interesting things we find about David in his passion for the name of God in this instance in his life is totally selfless. He's removed self completely from this passion for the Lord. And when he confronts the giant, there is a giant scoffing and laughing at God. How does David respond as the giant scoffs and laughs at him? Does he say, I will destroy you because of my amazing ability to fire this stone at you? Well, he doesn't, does he? Does he say, I will destroy you because of my great skill? No, he doesn't. Does he say, I will destroy you because of my experience of killing others in this manner? No. He doesn't say any of those things. He says, I fight you in the name of the Lord of hosts, whom you have defiled. I will destroy you that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. What a response. So full of God. So devoid of self. A response wanting to make a lot of God. A response wanting to display God for who he is, his might, his value. What a response. Selfless passion to put God and God's name on display. You know, David was not motivated to fight Goliath because of what he would get. Now, it's true that David did offer, David did ask his brother what reward defeating Goliath was. But I don't think he was after that reward. You know, a few chapters later, we read that King Saul offers David his daughter in marriage. And David initially refuses and says, who am I that I should marry the king's daughter? And so I don't think that this question that he asks was a question about him desiring after a reward. But really, I believe he was asking this question because he was saying, who is this man who's defying the armies of the living God? The king had better have a decent reward for this man, because this man is defying the living God. And so I think his motivation was entirely different for asking about the reward. And you know, our passion for God has to be void of self. It has to be 100% about God and 0% about me. And as soon as self creeps in, we rob ourselves of that satisfaction and joy that comes when we that we have when we are 100% for the Lord. You know, the most miserable Christian is a Christian that has his foot in two camps. One foot in God and the Bible, and the other foot in world and in self. And do you know why it's so miserable? It's because you can't enjoy God if you're not 100% seeking after him. And you can't enjoy the world either, and so you end up being miserable. God is either Lord of all or not at all. You know, there's no room for a bit of God and a bit of self. It must be all of God, none of myself. In our church here, is it about my rights, my desire, my service? Or is it about God, his work, his name being honoured? Same for salvation, isn't it? We can't enter heaven through anything good that we've done. Our hope has to be 0% in trusting our ability to do good works and 100% in the fact that Jesus was sentenced in my place, punished instead of me, so that I can go free. Our walk with the Lord has to be all of him and none of me. And living lives that join in with that song of the psalmist. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but to your name give glory. Well, why was David so focused on God? Why was he not focused on self? Well, it's because he knew something of God's character. He knew what God was like. And look at me in verses 45 to 47. Look at how David speaks to Goliath. He says, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of Philistines to this day, to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. What a speech. So full of God. So full of his might. So full of his value. Look at how he refers to his God. He calls him the Lord of hosts. You know, in the Bible, when you see a name for God, it's not just a label. It tells you something about God's character. And David here was saying, my God is the Lord of hosts. He is the Lord of all angels. He is the Lord of the armies of heaven. He is the Lord of the elements of matter. He is the Lord of everything. And David's passion was focused on God because he knew something of who God was and what God is like, of his greatness and splendor, his worth, his glory. He had seen God's faithfulness and deliverance firsthand when he was fighting those bears and lions in the countryside to protect his father's sheep. And he knew of God. And God stirred him into single-mindedness and passionate action. You know, when King Saul sees Goliath, he looks for the panic button, doesn't he? When David's brothers see Goliath, they look for the panic button. When the entire army sees Goliath, they hit the panic button and flee away. But David, he had such a view of God, such a concern for his glory, that he stepped out in faith and fought the giant. He let go of his reputation for the honour of God. Saul and his brother despised him and his ambitions, but he let go of that and went out. He let go of his own life. He could have been killed. He was prepared to stand alone, and he refuses to take any glory for his achievement. It's all about God and what he's done. And so he wins an amazing battle. David, a man with an incredibly strong passion for the Lord. David, number two, a man with an incredibly God-centered passion, rooted in the knowledge of God's wonderful character and the absolute worth of God. So what about us here this evening? You know, we have a huge advantage, don't we, over David? Because we can discover the worth and value of God in a far richer than David could ever have known whilst he walked the face of earth. Because between the time period where David was born and died, and between our lives, God revealed himself in the person of Jesus. Jesus left the splendors of heaven and lived among us here on earth. An amazing revelation of God. And so we can read his beautiful life, his wonderful character as he lived on earth. John, he was an eyewitness of Jesus. And as he looked back over the life of Jesus, he wrote these words. He wrote, we have seen his glory, the glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. And there are some people in this world, and they can tell you lots of wonderful things about the world. But do you know something of the wonderful things of Jesus Christ? What is the glory of Jesus? You know, there are many attributes that make up the glory of Christ. But John, he draws our attention to two things. He says, when we looked at Jesus, we saw a man full of grace and full of truth. Full of grace. You know, what a wonderful thing for somebody who has messed up their life, broken God's rules. Jesus, a man full of grace. You know, John could have pointed out that Jesus was a man full of wonderful miracles. He could have pointed out that he was a man full of wonderful power, a man full of wonderful teachers. But instead, he highlights something even more greater and more wonderful than that, a man full of grace. And by grace, somebody who has messed up their life, broken God's rules, can be raised from the dunghill up to heaven. And we who are so poor, how can we afford such a price? And the truth is we can't, but there is nothing to pay because Jesus has already paid. You just have to come to faith to him, a man full of grace. And John also said he was a man full of truth. You know, the world's so full of lies, isn't it? And in Sunnigal, one of the things that we struggled with was that the truth was something that wasn't valued. And perhaps we can say that on a political level here, Boris Johnson, a man who didn't value the truth. But Jesus, what a different man. A man full of truth. And this is where the glory of our great God and awesome God shines the brightest, isn't it? In the person of the Lord Jesus. There's no glory like that of Jesus on the cross. The weakest man who knows God can do great exploits for him if they are concerned about the honour of his name. The early church leaders, the apostles, you know, they were just fishermen, illiterate, yet look at how God used them. Look at what they wrote in the scriptures, and people have just been amazed. Who would have thought that David would have ever have had won a victory against Goliath? And he was just a young man, yet a man concerned about God's name. And God mightily used him. What about us? What about the glory of God's name amongst our friends in Shepshed, in our communities? Will we be here on Thursday praying for the sake of the glory of God's name? We'll be acting out. Perhaps there's someone we need to speak to this week about the Lord. Perhaps we'll meet someone and we'll need to take a stand. Perhaps we'll meet someone and we'll need to take our courage to speak to them of the Lord. Well, may the Lord help us. I just want to share with you a little story that happened last week. I was in Cornwall and I was on the beach with my children. And Johan, my oldest son, he said to me, John, he said, Daddy, can we go for a rock scramble? He wanted to go scrambling around the rocks around the cliff on the left of the beach. And I said to him, oh, Johan, we'll do that a bit later. So we waited until the tide was going out so that we wouldn't get cut off by the tide. And then I said, come on in, Johan, let's go and do this rock scramble. And off we went. And Lydia and Mike also wanted to come. And so we started clambering over the rocks around the coast. And we got to a point, and Johan was flying on ahead, no sense of fear. And Micah and Lydia, I was there with Lydia holding her hand. Micah was right behind me. And he looked ahead and he saw the crashing of the waves. And he said to Lydia, Lydia, we have to go back. We can't carry on. And Lydia, she looked at Micah in the eye. And she said to him, I can go on because I'm with my daddy. And you know what? I'm a fallible creature. I could have fallen. I did do a risk assessment before we went forward. But, you know, I'm a fallible creature. And there's Lydia saying, I can go on because of my daddy. And we've got a God, haven't we? And he's not a fallible creature like me. You know, he's almighty. He's powerful. And we can go on, can't we? Because we're going on with our Father. And whatever it is this week that's going to confront us, whatever giant we're going to face, when the time comes to make a stand against God, not against God, but against man, for God's name, when that time comes, you know, we can go on because we are with our Heavenly Father. And we can take a stand and speak out in courage for him. Well, may the Lord help us do that.